RCR with Paul Brennan.
So, to propose changes to Internet NZ's constitution and their impact on free speech and governance, joining us here at RCR again is media law expert, former judge David Harvey. David, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Paul. Happy to be here.
I got a feeling that that there are moves going on here from multiple angles. Let's start with Internet NZ. I've gone on to the Internet NZ website. It's about the only time I've ever had cause to do it. They tell us that they manage .nz domains on behalf of all New Zealanders and work to build a better online Aotearoa. Managing domain names has been around since, well, I can remember because I've started many websites. So what more help from them do we need than that?
Well, none, really. Internet NZ, when it got started a long, long time ago, the Internet Society of New Zealand, was seen as a technical organisation. And the main thing was to ensure the continued operation of the internet, and in particular the management of the domain name space, because without domain names, you can't get anywhere. That's your addressing, your addressing system. Without a domain name for RCR, for example, you just simply don't exist on the internet. So the domain name system is absolutely vital. But what has been happening is that very gradually and incrementally over the years, Internet NZ has sort of expanded its shall we say, field of interest. And it's gone beyond being a technical organisation to one that has become involved in social justice issues. And one of the things that happened was that, interestingly enough, when Ardern promulgated the Christchurch call, lo and behold, who was sitting right next to her at her right hand but the chief executive of Internet NZ, and Internet NZ supported that. Now, in the sense that the Christchurch call was interested in managing some aspects of safety and proper operation of the internet, I can understand that. But getting so close to the whole Christchurch call thing and then the subsequent areas of censorship and control of information and so on and so forth that characterised the Ardern government, it was a bit of a worry. Now, what has happened is that in 2022, the Incorporated Societies Act came into effect, and that specified some new directions for constitutions for incorporated societies. Internet NZ is an incorporated society. They needed to update their constitution in line with the legal requirements set out by the Act. Now, there are two ways of doing this. The first way is to amend your existing constitution so that it complies, which is a very straightforward operation. The second is to completely redo the process, the whole constitutional process, and that is what they have done. And there are two priorities that are driving this. The first is meeting the new legal requirements of the Incorporated Societies Act. And the second, and this is an interesting one, is upholding Te Tiriti o Waitangi and ensuring the constitution is centred on the treaty. And that arises as a result of a claim of systemic racism that took place back in 2021. And the Internet NZ website records that in June of 2021, and I'll read from it, Aotearoa was confronted with the worst of the internet when a YouTube video containing discriminatory and racist threats, including threats of mass violence against Māori, was shared online. We did not step up and defend Māori communities or work to have the material removed from the internet, and we were wrong. Now, the problem with that is that Internet NZ actually had no power to remove content from the internet. It could have taken some steps to have notified the appropriate authorities that this particular stuff was going around. But as a result of that, there's been a review of what could be called systemic racism within the organisation, and it's been found to be present. And accordingly, they need to adjust their point of view.
Well, found to be present, how, why, in what form?
because the review that was led by some people have decided that there was systemic racism within Internet NZ. The report was made available, and Internet NZ says we acknowledge Internet NZ has institutional racism built into our culture and structures. These systems and the way people have acted within them have caused harm to Te Ao Māori.
Does that mean they don't hire Maori?
No, it doesn't mean that they don't hire Maori, and I'm not exactly sure ex what it means.
Because it's
And
easy to
I,
say that, right? It's easy to say that.
oh, of course it is. Of course it is. And the way that I see it is, if Internet NZ is concerned about the treatment of Maori, given that there may have been systemic racism, rather than go through all of this upholding Te Tiritiri o Waitangi and so on and so forth, a simple statement prohibiting discriminatory treatment of Maori should suffice. Or alternatively, a statement requiring respectful treatment of all people, irrespective of race, creed, colour, or origin. That would solve it. There's no need to do this deep dive into the treaty, which was, after all, a compact between the Crown on the one hand and the chiefs on the other, not private organisations, not private individuals. You can't invoke the treaty, and nor can I.
Going back to what you said just a few moments ago about that video that was that they commented on,
Yeah, the YouTube video. Yeah.
the YouTube video, then knowing that they are effectively the gatekeepers to internet addressing, and without an internet address, you're not on.
Yeah.
And then kind of talking up, sounds a bit like to me, the opportunity to connect with Te Tiriti and co-governance and everything that, and outing yourself as systemically racist. It sounds like the ultimate play to basically cancel people from the internet, to deny them domain addresses.
Well, yeah. The situation is that Internet NZ manages, if you like, the system or the business of domain names. That particular operation is handled by a completely different entity. And there are some very, very strict rules about the refusal of domain names, which mean that it is very, very difficult for domain name NZ to refuse to register a domain name. It has been done, and it was done over COVID.
Right.
Surprise, surprise. But that type of silencing would not, in my view, take place. It would be very, very difficult for them to try and cancel people from the internet simply by refusing to register a domain name. But I understand that there are some moves afoot to set in stone the fact that domain name registrations can only be refused if they're unlawful.
Okay, so when it comes to safety on the internet, and that's been mentioned here by, and I think we're talking about, I don't know if the head of Internet NZ at the time was Stephen Judd, but I've seen a few quotes from him. He's talking about safety, keeping people safe and having this wonderful online experience for the people of Aotearoa. The frickin' internet's been around for over 30 years. I mean, the crazy part of it happened ages ago, right? I mean, let's be real. The wilderness that was ages ago. It's because what he's referring to, I'm thinking, I wonder what you think, is the freedom to talk through social media. That's the harm area. Because what else could it be?
It's one of them. There are various chat organizations and so on and so forth on some of the deep dark aspects
Oh
of internet.
no, assuming all that, but I'm talking about the
4chan.
internet that everybody. I mean,
Oh,
I don't go to
sure.
the dark web,
The you and me internet.
Yeah, the you and me internet.
Sort of first call email, second call Google. Yeah, sure. The whole issue of safety is conditioned by a lot of what you might call modern thinking, I think, where people are so easily offended, where they're so easily outraged, where they don't like what they're hearing, and therefore whatever they're hearing must be hate speech or something of that nature. There's a certain lack of resilience in discussion. People don't like hearing things that they don't agree with. And consequently, if you hear something that you don't agree with, well, then that must be wrong, or it's misinformation, or something like that. And if it's misinformation or disinformation, then it must be dangerous. It must, and of course, if it's dangerous, then it's unsafe. Now, you've got to remember that there was an outfit about dealing with conspiracy theories, Aotearoa, Fact Aotearoa. Now, interestingly enough, Stephen Judd headed that organization up until recently. I don't know if he's still involved in it.
Was that a fact-checking setup?
It was a thing about, it was a an organization that was dedicated to uncovering and revealing conspiracy theories.
Oh, well, to expose them for the crazy things they are. Okay.
Or
Well,
alternatively, but you see, the thing about conspiracy theories, Paul,
they all
is
come
that many,
true.
many, many people, some of them come true, but for many people, they're an alternative vision of the world. They're an alternative reality, and in some respects, because many of the so-called conspiracy theories, if I can use that term, go against the established orthodox view, they're seen as contrarian. Now, I don't have a problem with a contrarian point of view. And if somebody wants to float an idea about something that, some deep state aspect or something like that, that's fine. And if they've got some evidence, that's even better. And I can have a look at it and I can examine it critically. And I can say, well, I'm prepared to buy into this, or this needs further investigation, or this is just so off the planet that I'm not even going to bother anymore. Leave it up to individuals. We don't need to be told what to believe, although we were at one stage, and it wasn't so long ago.
Even using the term, I don't know if he did, but conspiracy is, it's so worn out anyway that it's kind of lost any of its punch. So are there any direct threats to free speech in New Zealand from this changing of Internet NZ's what constitution?
Not so much to New Zealand generally.
Right.
But within the organisation itself, there are a number of difficulties with the proposed constitution that they're floating. Now, I should make it very, very clear that at the moment, I'm talking about drafting guidelines that have been promulgated. I'm not talking about a set in stone constitution. That hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But some of the things that are proposed are that, for members, they must understand, uphold, and adhere to the society's objects, values, and code of conduct, taking responsibility for their actions and interactions with other members. You've got to adhere to a code of conduct, to the and Internet NZ is updating the code of conduct. Now, the focus on the code of conduct means that the code of conduct could be used to stifle debate or controversy or opinion that challenges an orthodox view. Does adherence to the code of conduct chill robust debate within the organisation? It could well do. And that, to me, is a little bit problematic. In my view, there should be an unqualified commitment to freedom of expression on the part of the membership so that there can be those robust discussions. But of course, as we've earlier discussed, those robust discussions may be unsafe.
Is there anything, I want to ask you about something else now, recent talk of pulling online platforms like RCR, let me put it that way, independent platforms that are not using the broadcast spectrum into some kind of regime, governance regime, a la Broadcasting Standards Authority, but I guess it would be modified on that. That seems to be kind of happening at the same time. Is there any connection between the two?
No, there isn't, because Internet NZ is a private organisation. It has nothing to do with the government, although it works occasionally with the government. But it's an incorporated society, a membership-based incorporated society, and that's that. But what is proposed by Minister Goldsmith is a 5-point plan about media futures, if you like. And although most of the provisions of that plan are pretty anodyne, like putting together Film NZ and some other funding organisation, I can't remember it offhand, and a couple of other things, that's not so much of a problem. But regulating broadcasting, or regulating the broadcasting or information space, is another ball of wax altogether. And what it does is it starts out with a suggestion that the Broadcasting Standards Authority is no longer fit for purpose, in that it only governs broadcast, and broadcast involves the spectrum. It doesn't involve streaming or on-demand media, and they're specifically excluded under the legislation. So that's fine. But I suppose what they're trying to do is to expand it. But in this discussion document that has been put out, they've referred to professional media organisations as being the target of a new regulatory system. Now, what they then go on to do is to talk about how this new regulatory system is going to look. But they haven't actually worked out the target, just professional media organizations.
Well, that could be me earning money from my YouTube views.
It could be
And
whatever,
I could be nobody normally.
or me making money from my Substack, sure.
Yeah.
But that's they haven't actually defined the target. So they've put in place a sort of sketchy outline of a media of a regulatory organization without actually defining the target. And to me, it sounds like a solution in search of a problem. One of the difficulties that they have, of course, is the sort of everywhereness, if you like, of the internet. Now, RCR is based in New Zealand and therefore would come under its jurisdiction. But Netflix, for example, is not. And are we going to try and regulate Netflix in the United States? And of course, what would Donald Trump have to say about that? It's a half-baked work that really doesn't do anybody any credit. I'm surprised that the minister signed off on it, because certainly, if I had been casting my eye on that and saying this is a proposal that's going to go out under my signature, I would have said, no way, Jose, go back, go away and do it again, because it's inadequate. It's quite inadequate. In fact, it would have got a fail grade if I was judging it at university. But it had some good parts, but the real meat of it, which is the regulatory structures, is just terrible. But it's part of an ongoing drive. I mean, under the Labor government, we had the Department of Internal Affairs with the Safer Online Services and Web Platforms, and that would have caught RCR and various other streaming outfits. Now we've got this new thing, and I'm just wondering whether or not, because of all of the difficulties that Mr. Goldsmith has had with the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, which seems to be heading nowhere, he had to be seen to be doing something in the broadcasting portfolio, because broadcasters have been yelling and screaming, and particularly mainstream media, saying, help us, we need money.
Yeah, I don't quite see how that gets the money, though, in the end, because they're all, no one's, very few new listeners and viewers are being attracted in that space.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I mean, the simple fact of the matter, Paul, is that because the internet is everywhere, you just set up offshore in the same way that good old Radio Hauraki did in the 1960s.
The Terry.
Yep, absolutely.
A friend of mine used to drop their tapes to them while doing a beach report for another radio station. How about that?
Yeah. Well, I remember seeing the Turi sailing out of West Haven. It was a great day. It was a great occasion.
Yeah. I guess there's commonality here. The people who make up these, boards and societies, etc., they seem to be from a limited slice of New Zealanders, and obviously, if you look into their backgrounds, you can kind of see how they got there. And I note that with Internet NZ, back to that, the shuffling, how they make up their numbers and almost quotas, actually. It seems like meritocracy isn't a main driver here. And
No.
that, again, is a worry, isn't it, for, well, people like us, but anyone interested in freedom ultimately, because you're going to get like people bunching together. Some are there not because they're the smartest knife or the sharpest knife in the drawer, because they kind of were the next choice given a quota. It doesn't bode very well, does it?
Well, you're absolutely right, Paul. And just as an example, the new rules have proposed the Constitution would establish a nomination committee, and the committee would receive all governance nominations and undertake a recruitment and vetting process for appointment or elections. Now, that means that basically there's this approval process before you can get onto the committee, rather than leaving it up to the membership. Crazy. Absolutely crazy and undemocratic as well. A nomination committee could only serve to ensure that like-minded orthodox or approved candidates are nominated. And although it trumpets the need for diversity, it would seem that this proposal would do exactly the opposite. Because what would happen is that the organization's control, if you like, or governance would become atrophied. There wouldn't be any opportunity for new blood to come in. It's a sort of totalitarianism, Maoist, Mao Zedong type of approach to intellectual purity before one can qualify for board membership. And I hope that that doesn't make its way to the Constitution, because it would be appalling if it did.
All right, to sort of w wind up everything into a nice, neat package, what needs to happen for us to be relaxed about any changes? What do we have to see demonstrably in front of us? Because so far, I mean, it's all happy talk, but I tell you, I'm not impressed.
Well, first things first, the Constitution needs to be settled. So, and then once it's been settled, there can be a vote on the Constitution, and the vote takes place at a special general meeting. Now, Internet NZ has so structured itself in the past that if you want to join Internet NZ, you don't immediately get voting rights. You need to wait a certain period of time before you get voting rights. So if you joined Internet NZ now, you wouldn't get voting rights on the Constitution. But who knows what's going to happen with the existing membership as far as that Constitution is concerned, because there's been quite a bit of discussion about it in the media and in various discussion groups and so on. The next thing is that once the Constitution is passed, there's an annual general meeting of Internet NZ, and at that annual general meeting, votes for the board and or the committee or the governance structure will take place. And that's where people can, individuals can voice their approval or disapproval of the way things are going. And of course, all you need to do is to get a new committee or a new board in place that says, well, we think that this constitution is a little bit too controlling or something like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to propose some amendments to it. No constitution is set in stone. And if you can get the numbers for amendment, you can amend a constitution. So that may be a way of dealing with it in the future.
Right.
It's one of these awful legal processes and points of order, Mr. Chairman, and all that type of stuff. But,
Okay.
that's the way things are done.
And have you had any thoughts? You might have caught up with the news that there have been some changes in shareholdings with NZME and the centrist funder, Canadian gentleman, has come in. I think he's got 9% now. Is
Yeah,
that a, yeah.
I noticed that, and I wonder if it's coincidental that the very progressive lefty Simon Wilson didn't have a column in the New Zealand Herald
Oh.
this morning, because he's normally in on a Tuesday.
Well, there has been some talk about certain seats becoming vacant in there.
Yeah.
But is that what that got me thinking? Is that shows the vulnerability of the decaying legacy. And it could be that they could find themselves in a new space with people. I mean, if you go read the centrist, you know where it comes from.
Yeah.
That sort of morphs them into something new again, potentially. And
Could
that's
be
the
interesting.
market, that's the marketplace, I suppose, doing its
Yes.
thing.
Yep. That's the way things get done. I mean, that's how Rupert Murdoch made his fortune.
Interesting times.
They are indeed.
Thanks for catching up with us again, Judge David Harvey. Always fascinating to talk. And let's see how this goes. And I'm sure there'll be more chats on this.
Oh, for sure. Thank you, Paul. Pleasure to be here.